Wake up!
Wake up!
Mike Mulligan, David Haw.
He's looking downfield, nothing there. Spins away, throws on the move. It is caught! Roma Dunze connects with his fellow rookie.
1-9. Get used to it. This is just a beautiful. How he just bails out of the pocket here. And this is the toughest throw you could do. Throw into your left.
Away from the arm side, right?
And he does it.
That is in the bucket, off platform, away from the arm side. That's the type of stuff at USC that was dropping jaws of scouts across the country. Williams, pressure coming. He felt it. Looked, saw it, evaded it. Still on the move. Looking around. Williams is going to take off for the end zone.
It's like it's its own playground.
Benintendi, this one out to right field, and a catch is made at the shoestrings by Leon. That is the ball game as the Astros win it 2-0, and they will take this three-game series 2-1.
The pitch. He swings, ground ball to third, fielded by Barger. His throw across in time, ball game over. Toronto prevents the sweep.
Start your mornings with Mully and Haw, 5:30 till 10 a.m. on 670 The Score.
Happy Monday, guys.
Let's go.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Oh, yes, indeed, Mr. David. Big weekend in the wide world of sports. Inching ever closer to that season opener. I know it's only two preseason games down, but we got to look forward to something, buddy.
Morning, Mo. Yeah, happy Monday. I love the opens. Brandon does a great job of the opens. But today, wow, couldn't we have just stopped after the Bears highlights? Because
then you're like,
was a weekend. Oh, yeah, Saturday. That was memorable. Let's talk about that. Yeah. We want to play the hits. The hits are the Bears and Caleb Williams right now. When you hear the White Sox and the Cubs highlights after that, you're like, oh, my God.
Well, the Cubs were having a good weekend.
We have to mention them, too.
Right up to the screeching halt yesterday.
It was a good weekend.
It's a screeching halt yesterday.
It was a really frustrating Sunday for the Cubs at Wrigley Field.
The halt came at a screech.
It was a screeching halt. They didn't score any runs.
That's the problem.
Yeah. Neither did the Sox. They combined for 0 runs in Chicago baseball on Sunday.
Yeah.
Well. So, Bears.
Bears. The Cubs almost got to 500, right?
Well, they're still...
There was that one time where they almost got
there. It's an elusive number for them so far this summer. And they have a chance now that the teams that are... competitive are out of the way. I keep hearing about this favorable schedule. At some point in time, you're going to have to sweep a team. At some point in time, you're going to do what they did going into the Cleveland series. They had won like 8 out of 10, and then they stopped hitting. And that's always going to be the case. The Cubs, we keep being reminded every so often when we get a little carried away and start to tease ourselves into something is possible that really might not be likely. In 27 games since the All-Star break, the Cubs have scored 2 or fewer runs 11 times. They've been shut out 5 times. That's a team with an offensive issue.
They lost their first. They were swept for the first time. That was bad timing. I'm just saying they had avoided that all year,
yeah,
which was pretty remarkable.
Blue Jays, they had them.
And then you thought maybe they'd sweep the Blue Jays to make up for it.
They should have. They had Shota throwing... like Shota has thrown all season long. It was a good outing. They give up 1 run to the Blue Jays. You're at home. Boy, the wind was blowing in. That was a factor. There are a couple balls that might have been out of there. The wind blowing in was a factor. But
the wind was insane.
It was the same for everybody.
But it was just crazy.
Crazy. Right field, crazy. 1 at bat. Left field, the next at bat.
Yeah.
Played tricks on a foul pop-up that nobody could find. It was a very strange day again at Wrigley Field. Cubs didn't take care of business, though, so they lose 2 out of 3. They get another off day today.
That's a lot of off days, isn't it? Am I imagining that?
Craig Counsell teased us by saying that we reminded him of a playoff schedule because you have off days, and that's why relievers get extended rest, like Ethan Roberts, for instance, hadn't pitched since July 30th. But they have another built-in off day into the, you know, it's a forgiving schedule if you're a good
right,
team.
If you would win, just for that one bit.
Still 5.5 out, I think, with
if
three teams.
Score.
If they could score a run. 5.5 out with three teams in front of them. Still the same type of reality for the Cubs. There are only 37 games left, though. 61 and 64.
Hard to sweep if you have a game in which you're shut out. Score has learned.
That's really keen insight.
There you go.
You cannot score. You cannot win if you cannot score.
We've been studying.
White Sox learned the same lesson down in Houston Sunday. Boy. Kai Bush, very good. Kai Bush, very solid.
Got out of a jam early and did a good job.
Another one of those promising young arms. Jonathan Cannon, we'll see another one tonight against the Giants on the Bay, by the Bay.
See, the draft pick has been moved to Winston-Salem. That's pretty good. High A right away.
Yes, that is a good – he pitches on Saturday. Hagen Smith, I believe, pitches Saturday.
Yep, that's exactly right.
Makes his professional debut. There are signs of life on the South Side. They may not be winning games, but they're showing a little bit of life that we wanted them to show once they change managers. We'll talk about Grady Sizemore. I think he's part of the pick six.
Yeah, they ought to have done that a long time ago.
But let's face it, this is a Bears weekend. And after Saturday afternoon, I don't know that anything else mattered.
And it's a Bears Thursday this week. How good is that?
It's a victory Monday, isn't it?
Today is a victory Monday, even though Sunday technically would be victory Monday, and there's a victory Friday planned for later in the week. It's a nice week.
It's a nice week. I don't know that anything that happens Thursday night is going to excite people too much. It's fun to have a trip to Kansas City, I suppose. There are a lot of people playing for maybe roster spots or practice squad jobs. I don't think anything that happens Thursday night will affect the depth chart.
No, I don't. I don't believe that either. But I do believe that now that it's been shown, you can prepare to intercept that behind the back pass.
That was an amazing pass by Patrick Mahomes. Amazing. You sit there and you play it back again and again, and you hear his explanation. It's even better that he was ticked off that Travis Kelce ran the wrong route, so he, in frustration, flipped it behind the back. What do I have to lose? If he's not going to run the right route, I'm not going to throw it I'm not going to throw it forward.
Just so nuts.
It's crazy.
Mahomes
it's
keeps, so it goes behind the back. Kelsey's got it for the first down. How do you like that?
Well, they talked about it in practice this week, and Mahomes even talked about the fact that he said Andy wants him to do it in a game. Well, guess what? Here it is.
You really think Andy wants him to do it in a game?
If he does, then he's nuts.
He's nuts.
That's just not something you should do in a game. But, I mean, listen. The games don't count. They're having fun.
It also shows, as
he explained, Kelce apparently ran. Did you see Kelce's response? Kelce said he was running and I was going out to block and the ball showed up.
It also shows you the state of mind for a team that has won two straight Super Bowls and they have very little to lose. Let's say it's intercepted. Let's say it's incomplete. Let's say big deal. Yeah. They don't have anything to lose, really. They're playing with house money. It's going to be that kind of mentality all season long. And then somewhere along the line in December, we'll start to, can they have the edge going into the playoffs? And then they'll get focused and we'll see. But this is a very loose team trying to just have some fun. And they are very much succeeding there.
Score, not to overstate the obvious, Score has learned he's very good.
Yeah.
He's good. Mahomes, good.
I think if you ask Tyreek Hill, he reminds him of somebody.
I love Tyreek Hill. What he's saying, stuff like that.
When did he become the spokesman for all things NFL, though? It's very funny.
I think he's great.
Very funny. Yeah, the tweet on Saturday after Caleb Williams did what he did at Soldier Field was very impressive, got a lot of attention. Caleb Williams' answer after the game, I thought, was just one of the things that really I think was impressive Saturday. This is what he said when he was asked after the game, or we'll get to it in a moment. But the comparison when he said Tyreek Hill reminded him of, and he fill in the blank, it was obviously he was talking about Patrick Mahomes.
Of course.
There were a lot of comparisons, a lot of praise after what Caleb Williams did on Saturday after the first three.
And I'm pretty sure Flusie wants him to throw one behind the back.
No, I don't think so.
No, only Andy.
We don't want that.
I don't know. I don't believe that would be a good idea.
I don't think it would be a good idea either.
No.
I think
for anyone at any level.
No, but the thing is that
incredible that Mahomes can do it.
Mahomes can do it. Joe Burrow could probably get away with it. Josh Allen could get away with it. Aaron Rodgers, if he wants. I mean, there's a handful of quarterbacks that could probably get away with it.
I think Mahomes can get away with it because he can do it and because he's winning a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I think that even like, I love Joe Burrow. I don't think he should try that. That's just not his game. I think Rodgers, if he were to do something like that, no one would like it. Who else did you say? Josh Allen needs to win.
I don't think winning is necessarily a prerequisite for a behind-the-back pass.
I think if you...
Lamar Jackson could do it.
If you win and you have won, you can do anything.
Yeah. How about, do you think Russell Wilson could get away with it?
No.
Justin Fields, could he get away with it?
Boy, you know the old adage, David, when you don't have one, that when you have two, you don't have one.
Well, the Steelers are looking like they have two, so they don't have
they
one.
They are looking a struggling lot like with preseason. A team. They are... They have yet to name a starter. They need more information. You know, they might not have a starter, with all due respect.
I kidded this morning that
Russ's final career.
The Steelers preseason, they have concluded they miss Mason Rudolph.
Now that is just that is a damning comment.
But don't they kind of miss Mason Rudolph?
Well, they don't have a starting quarterback.
Neither guy.
They haven't named a starter.
Neither guy has really taken advantage of the opportunity. Justin Fields now has had two opportunities.
Yes.
He's been eh.
No, he's not been the guy.
But he's looked. Here's the thing.
I love what Tomlin said about it, though, after the first opportunity, where he said, you got to protect the ball.
You got to protect the ball. And I think this after the second one, you look at it, and it wasn't as impressive him throwing, but his ability to make plays with his feet may help him close the gap here. If Russell Wilson can't be any more consistent than he was the other night when they played, he didn't look good.
If Russ can't make plays with his arm or his feet, and Fields can only make plays with his feet,
you'll take that.
You're going to end up taking that.
You're going to end up taking
that. Want to or not?
You don't necessarily want to, but you might be in a position where you have to. They have to move the football.
Here's hoping, because you need that better draft pick.
Yeah.
But don't you feel like whoever starts the season isn't going to finish it with them at quarterback?
I think they're going to play both guys at some point because of injury or ineffectiveness. How about Bo Nix for the Broncos?
He was good. Did you watch any of that game?
I watched part of that game, and he has established himself, I think, as the starter in Denver. And Sean Payton is looking like a guy that is feeling very good about being right so far. Sean Payton likes to be right.
Yeah.
And he so far looks like he's got a young quarterback. I guess not so young, but he's got a rookie quarterback.
He's got an experienced rookie.
Mm-hmm.
That makes any sense.
That has looked pretty good in preseason. So there could be several rookie quarterbacks getting a look.
There could also weird quarterback news. Did you see that Gardner Minshew has been named the starter in Vegas?
Does that surprise you?
Yes. Not really, but yes. It just means they don't have a starter either.
Aiden O'Connell was the guy who went 5-5, I think, last year.
Yeah, he started the
rookie.
Final nine games.
You could win with him. He's a system guy, I think. He's a local guy through Purdue and then from Stevenson. Did he go to Stevenson High School?
Yep.
And then, but they gave Minshew guaranteed money for a reason. And now Minshew Mania hits Vegas. So we'll see how that goes. Funny. Realistic expectations, though. They're not going to be that good if Gardner Minshew is the guy that anointing
that
the starter.
Sadly, probably is accurate, although I like him. I like the mustache. I like his whole
vibe. Yeah, he's got a little vibe.
Bounced around a bit.
Who would you rather have your quarterback, Gardner Minshew or Sam Darnold?
Caleb Williams.
That wasn't the question.
Oh, I'm sorry.
You could ask that question today about a lot of quarterbacks.
And that is one of the answers. Yeah.
How many more quarterbacks would you rather have than Caleb Williams? It's a shorter list than it was on Friday.
Well, I mean, I'm not.
I'm just saying.
I'm not being mean about this, but I do think you've got to take into account that it was a slow building, tremendous performance.
What Caleb Williams did on Saturday is reminded people that not even reminded people, because he's not been here long enough for us to forget anything about him. What he did was he showed that with...
He can make plays. He's got some...
With the few, if you have patience, he can have one play or two plays, let's say one series of greatness can outweigh three or four series of ineffective play.
Four or five consecutive plays where you were like, wow, that's fantastic. But he also put together, what was it, three series where you were kind of like, well, why isn't this going better? You almost, you know, you just kind of like a guy to come out, have those good plays, get it over with, and then you could sit down.
Yeah, I think that you'd prefer the glimpses of greatness over the extended consistency. If he had played as long as he played and they would have, you know, been
I'm not
steady,
guy was
consistent.
Great.
What he did in the
he was wonderful.
The pass to Adunze and then the touchdown scramble and run was just give us a little bit of a tease about what you can expect moving forward.
Another great pass to Tyler Scott that ended up on a PI, but still a nice, you know, it was a good play.
Throwing well, would have liked to see if Tyler Scott could come down with a catch. That's the one thing I wondered about, because that is the thing with Tyler Scott is can get open, can he make the catch? Was put not only was the fact that it was the ball seemed to be put where it should have been on that deep ball, but the fact that it was thrown at all. That was
and we'll get into this, but David, I thought even when they were not converting in the first three series, even the three and outs, I thought he was going to the right spot with the ball. That's one of the conclusions you have with him, which is, oh, this is going to work because he's going. He knows what he's doing. He's going the right way. Like the opening series, he could have made a play here or there. I mean, it wasn't without the possibility of a big play happening.
Yeah, he was definitely going with the right place or going with the football and making the right decision. You want to see that. He's a rookie. You want to see those kind of things with the operation. But let's face it, he's more gate attraction than gatekeeper. He's not game manager.
No.
So what he did later was show us and remind us that he was capable of being that guy. And that's the fun.
And the fact that his confidence level is so high that it doesn't matter if it starts right away or he has to build to it, he gets there.
It never really wanes.
No.
I don't think even after a pedestrian start. So he makes plays like he did, spinning out of trouble, throwing the ball to Adunze, and getting the kind of praise locally and nationally from a guy like a Tyreek Hill to make the comparison to Patrick Mahomes, which is what he was asked about after the game.
It's respect. It's cool and all, but I'm Caleb Williams, Patrick Mahomes, Tyreek Hill. Much love to them and things like that. Met them, talked to them both and things like that. But we're here to win games for Chicago Bears. Awesome. The Bears.
He took that question and turned it into a bigger picture, team first. Very humble reply. I was sitting there, Mully. I went to the game, was there post game, and I left there. That was the last question as you heard him sign off. And I thought, okay, he has just
signed off as the Bears.
That was funny.
I love that.
He did sign off as the Bears.
The Bears.
Every post game with Caleb Williams has got to be must watch, must listen stuff. He has already become a guy that you sit there. And I don't want to overstate it. I don't want to say you're sitting there in awe of this young man, but he is a young man, and he does have a presence about him that you sit there very much taken by that and kind of focused on that. And every question he had and every reply, it was thoughtful, it was complete, and it had a lot of confidence. Impressive stuff.
At this point, and again, we're just getting going, but you've got to like what you're seeing. You got to like what you're hearing. You got to like the flashes that are there. I mean, I don't know any Bear fans in my life that aren't shot out of the cannon a little bit.
A little bit.
This guy. Yeah. I mean, I'm just saying. You try to say, oh, well, you got to be composed and see how it goes and things will. everybody's pretty fired up about this thing.
It's easy to get fired up about this thing, especially when you hear the way that he handled himself after a game in which he struggled at first. And I struggle is a relative term. I think Matt Eberflus put it well when he called it a professional effort. These are the kind of things you're going to encounter as a rookie quarterback in the NFL. You're going to struggle. You're going to have series that go kaput. You're going to have things that go nowhere. And then it doesn't damage your confidence or your psyche enough to where you're not going to be taking a shot down the field 60 yards, or you're not going to be spinning out of trouble trying to make something happen.
The vibe is really good in town with the Chicago Bears.
It is.
Just with the Bears in terms of our sporting landscape at this point, but that is very uplifting.
It is, because Caleb Williams, because of the defense, because of the way things are coming together, they're
seeing some guys who hadn't played that are playing well, they're good players.
Games mean nothing, but they have been very convincing in three preseason games. They look like a competent football team. They look like a well-coached football team, and it's been a while since we've been able to say that in mid-August. There aren't a lot of jobs to be won this preseason. They look like they know what they're doing.
It's going to be a tough roster to make.
It will be a tough roster to make for some guys.
You can see why Valus Jones was moved to running back.
No doubt about it. And it's for the second straight game. I mean, whatever you think about him, he has taken advantage of an opportunity to give them something to think about before they, you know, may
cut him. His return game looks okay. But what were his numbers as a running back? They weren't very good.
No.
I think that Khalil Herbert's a better running back than he is.
Well, Khalil Herbert should be.
Well, he is.
Yeah, he should be. I just don't know what their commitment level is to three running backs, four running backs. He might keep as many as five or six. It's a really good problem to have, the Bears having as many guys competing for those last few spots that are open, because there aren't very many spots open.
There aren't many open. They look pretty good. They've got depth in the secondary. They're looking pretty good. I would say all around, you've got to feel good about the talent level of the roster. You know, if you conclude nothing else, the general manager has put together a pretty talented roster.
Yeah, he was making the rounds on Saturday. He definitely saying the right things. He was asked about, you know, pursuing Matthew Judon. We'll talk about that during the pick six. He was also, you know, had to be pleased. Overall, the Bears are pretty healthy.
Yeah.
You know, they haven't had the big injury so far.
Then they got another guy back. We'll talk about that too.
Yes, we'll talk about a lot of stuff, because it is Bears Monday. It was a Bears weekend, and it helps us kind of divert our attention from the fact that both baseball teams are struggling. I think the Cubs winning 2 out of 3, they win a series, and you say, how can they be struggling? Well, they didn't score a run on Sunday. They needed that sweep.
They needed the sweep. I would think it's an accurate statement that the Cubs are struggling. I think it's also accurate that they have the easiest play in the rest of the way, and that at some point they could put together a run again. Hard to win when you don't score, but I don't think struggling does enough. It's not a strong enough word for whatever the heck is going on the South Side.
No. I don't think
it is beyond struggle. It feels almost purposeful in a really bad way. I believe they were eliminated from the playoffs.
They were mathematically eliminated on Saturday.
Earliest than anyone ever in the wild card era, which is relatively new, but nonetheless.
1969. So in the last 55 years, no team has been eliminated any earlier than the White Sox were on Saturday.
And the Sox said, that's nothing. Wait till you see some of these records we're going to set before it's all over.
Wait until we're done. You think you know futility? We know futility.
All right, we've got so much to get to. A lot of fun. The Pick Six is next. Mully and Haw, the score.
It's Pick Six with Mully and Haw, where we debate the top six sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. Pick Six with Mully and Haw starts now.
Pick Six, sponsored by Affinity Whole Health. Do what I did. Visit FeelGreatIllinois.com to learn more about their testosterone therapy or their weight loss options. What has impressed you most about Bears rookie quarterback Caleb Williams through the first two preseason games? Are there any areas of concern regarding his play? What stood out to you on Saturday afternoon?
You know, I got to tell you, there is a star quality to this kid that is pretty sensational. The way that he carries himself, the idea that he can be as dangerous as he is, he can make plays to all levels of the field and get the ball down the field, that he can run if he's so inclined. Usually he's just trying to buy some time, but he had a touchdown run almost for snorts and giggles. It was easy peasy. You know, this is a weird one, but if you watch a lot of sports in Chicago, there is a certain Patrick Kane element going on with Caleb Williams where he's like chewing on his mouthpiece before the play is called. He's standing there and he's looking at the play and he's got his mouthpiece. He's kind of chewing on it, Kaner style. And I'm kind of like, get your mouthpiece in. Like, I'm worried about dental issues. I know that's insane, but it's a totally different game. Like, I get it. You know, the mouthpiece, I don't know why that got to me, but I'm only worried about his safety. That's the only thing I am concerned about. He did take a sack in that game, which was like, don't touch the quarterback. What are you doing? But what stood out on Sunday was that even though it didn't get going right away, as we talked about, he knows where he's going with the football. He's got this innate quarterback sense / ability that will pop up even when he's not making a play. You'll see him, and he's not just sailing a pass. He's going. He knows kind of what he's doing. I know there was a play they were called for throwing the ball out of bounds and no receiver was there. I don't know what that play was, what broke down on that one. But I think there's a lot of special. And the fact that even when things aren't going his way, he can turn on a dime and start putting some plays together and end up having a performance that you laud is very impressive. I don't know that there's anything yet that I don't like about this guy.
Hard not to like. Things to question, but hard. I mean, the arm strength, wow. Right? I mean, you know, the two passes to Rome Odunze and the one where Rome's feet were out of bounds, I mean, the zip on the ball and the ability to put that ball in the only spot where you could have put it was really, really impressive. Now, one thing that the only thing other than being a quarterback that he reminds me of Justin Fields about is he does seem to hold on to the ball too long. And he is so pass first. And he said that in postgame about he eventually took off and ran. I was talking to a friend about the scoring play when they scored. And if you said, well, if think about if Justin Fields had been, I said, yeah, he would have taken off about 4 seconds sooner. He may or may not have gotten into the end zone, but he would have taken a wicked hit on that play on top of it. He may have because he was so physically built. Like, he might have taken the defender into the end zone, but he would have taken a hit that he didn't need to take. But, yeah, it's off to a really good start.
Yeah, I think you notice the poise. It's an obvious presence. But the one thing I think he reminded us of with that 45-yard pass to Odunze was the precision. This is an accurate passer. And this is somebody that is more accurate when things break down than he is maybe in the pocket. So these off-platform throws and these off-scripted plays are going to be things that defenses come to dread and offense the Bears come to love because of what is possible and what he's capable of doing. He's one of those quarterbacks that is obviously special, but he has the ability to make everyone around him better, and he's going to make this receiving corps even better and bring out the most in them. I liked most about his demeanor in that when things weren't good, the first three and outs, he didn't let that get in the way and dictate the course of the rest of the day. It was a professional effort in that sense. That's the way Matt Eberflus described it. And what he meant was that he was a professional in terms of every series, the next series wasn't affected by the previous one. So he learned from his mistakes. He got better and stayed confident. He's got a deep reservoir of confidence and belief, and you could see that. I liked his post-game presence. I liked his in-game precision. And there was really nothing to complain about when it comes to Caleb Williams on Saturday.
Yeah, I'm not talking necessarily about a pick six or something like that.
Voice of Brad Biggs, Biggs time, 7 o'clock. Besides Caleb Williams, who else stood out Saturday and made a lasting impression? Were there any players who made a stronger case for playing time with their performance or weakened their position?
Well, I don't know how many jobs are really up for grabs, but I do think Terrell Smith is a cornerback they have reason to trust. He had an interception. He's playing with a lot of confidence. They have a deep secondary. I hate to say it this way, but they are well-equipped for any injuries that happen in the secondary. They're prepared for attrition because they have quality depth at the spot at cornerback. They have Tyrique Stevenson. They've got Terrell Smith. Obviously, Jalen Johnson is the best player on the field, I think, when he is playing at the level he's playing at. Kyler Gordon stood out as a nickel rusher. He's a guy that had a couple as a nickel back. He is dangerous. He needs to stay healthy. From a positive standpoint, he definitely stood out. You look at Adunze, he's a weapon. He's going to be one of those guys that when he touches the ball, big things are bound to happen. He, I think, left an impression. As far as the other side of it, there were players that stood out. I asked Matt Eberflus postgame about Nate Davis, and he did say he had to watch the tape. Expected that answer because Nate Davis was a guy who did look like he was rusty. He did look like Chris Jenkins beat him, and Caleb Williams owned it for holding on to the ball too long, but you don't like to see your highly paid, highly scrutinized right guard make the kind of obvious mistake that Nate Davis seemed to have made. So he stood out for the wrong reasons. Torrey Taylor, great day. The punter, I'm not going to say it. Whatever you want to call him, Torrey Taylor, no nicknames, he was the real deal on Saturday.
I was disappointed in the Bears running game inside the tackles. They've gotten some things when they've kind of gotten outside. Now, I know we haven't, Roschon Johnson hasn't taken a snap yet in preseason. Swift was out of the game as well on Saturday. So that just left you with, you know, Khalil Herbert. And that's, we're assuming that he's going to be on the team if they don't trade him or something crazy like that happens. I mean, you know, Romo Odunze was your second leading rusher with 16 yards on a play that we'll never forget. Velus Jones had 6 carries for 13 yards. So the run game was not what I want it to be.
You know, I think that when we talked about we were picking players who could be breakthrough guys earlier in the year before the year really got going, I thought Kyler Gordon had that shot, and I really kind of like him as an athlete. Now, can he stay on the field? You asked that question. That is the only question, because I thought he jumped off the field. I thought he made play after play. And I think he's got a chance to be a really special player. He's just an unbelievable athlete, and he can do so many good things. It's just a question of whether he can stay on the field. And I know that sounds pessimistic, but he's one of these quick twitch guys for whatever reason. He just is. Do we know why he didn't play for the first 5 or 6? What's been holding him up? He's back. Oh, he was had some discomfort. Boy, did he look good.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, do you want that guy to play. By the way, Jaquan Brisker, another guy out, and we don't know what's wrong with him
now.
He's been out.
They don't have to
now.
Say, do they? We don't know because
they don't have to say. And I'm just saying, those are guys that are impact. They, as you mentioned, the depth in that secondary is impressive. And they've got a lot of guys that look like they can play. But you want your front line guys there. You want them week in and week out. And I think that Kyler Gordon has, like, Pro Bowl ability if he could stay on the field. That sack he had was unbelievable.
Unbelievable.
Oh, my God.
Unbelievable. They didn't see him coming either.
Oh, my God. The poor quarterback.
You know who else played well we didn't mention? I'm surprised we haven't yet. Tyson Bagent.
Yeah.
He looked good.
Yeah.
Nice touch passes.
He's won that backup job, David, if you were worried about it.
I wasn't.
I know.
I don't know. It's a good question.
If you're Matt Eberflus, what is the risk-reward conversation like when deciding whether to play Caleb Williams Thursday against those Chiefs in Kansas City? Flus said he'd make that decision on Sunday after meeting with his staff. Which way do you think he's leaning? And does it matter?
I would imagine that they've seen enough. but I don't know that they shouldn't start him for a couple of series. The problem is maybe they had that plan. I think they wanted to play him for a little bit of a longer look last week, Saturday. And they were forced to, though, because they didn't get anything going. For, you know, the first three series were three and out. So I think the problem with making a decision on playing him is that you want to bring him out there, you know, get the operation going, let him start a few games, and then boom, you're waiting for the season opener. But I don't know that you can afford to do that if you're not going to be able to start fast enough, and then you end up playing him a little bit longer than you might have planned. I think I've seen enough, and I think that it is enough. How many plays has he hit? They wanted him to go to between 45 and 55.
He's around 43, I think.
Yeah. So, I mean, ideally, you could start him. You could get him in and out for a couple of series, and then you're laughing. Problem is, what if those series don't go well? Then you're going to have to keep him out there, and then that means you got to keep everyone out there. It becomes a little bit of a muddle for me.
I'd be shocked if he were out there, but yeah. The fact that he answered the question the way he did means he's thinking about it. He could have easily said starters aren't playing on Thursday. It could have been that. Like, so that they're considering it. Now I don't think they're gonna go with it, but they're definitely considering it. And you just can't get him hurt. And Mully, your point, like, I wouldn't mind seeing him for a series or two, kind of like the first game, right? But the problem would be is if it doesn't, now you want him to finish on a high note. So he has now finished on a high note. He finished on a high note Saturday afternoon. You gave the fans who deserve it, I believe, the opportunity to see them like they did. And now let's just keep everybody healthy.
Well, Matt Eberflus did adjust his thinking, even though post-game, when I asked him if he changed his thinking because the offensive struggled early to play him longer, he said, nah, not really. That was all part of it. I don't think so, because Ryan Poles complimented the coaching staff on Fox for sticking with the starters longer than they were planning to stick with the starters. So that was kind of funny. They needed this momentum going into the final preseason game or the season, whichever they decide. I think they should play him. I think you keep the momentum going. I think you can get hurt at practice. J.J. McCarthy did. You can get hurt anywhere. You get better playing football by playing football. And it's not a big deal. You're not going to pound the fist. You're not going to demand. You're not going to show outrage if they don't play him. But I do think there's value in giving Caleb Williams a start, playing a couple series in that environment, to continue the muscle memory, all the pregame stuff, get him used to being a professional NFL quarterback in this setting with this group. It makes sense to me. Play a couple series. Heck, did you see Kyle Shanahan, our guy? Last night he said Brock Purdy's going to play in the final. He's going to play in the final preseason game. It can be done. Guys like to play. My sense is Caleb Williams would play if asked and probably wants to. So right now I would say there is risk-reward conversations. Maybe they've already made their minds up. Maybe he's done. But I would give him a couple more series.
This is not a question that I expected from you.
When we heard from Nate Davis last week, he was talking a big game. Did he play a big game? Caleb Williams was sacked by rookie Chris Jenkins Jr. at one point and blamed himself for holding onto the ball, but Davis didn't cover himself in glory, being a beaten guy, but a third guy on the depth chart. What are your thoughts on Nate Davis?
My thoughts are, while I am not an offensive line expert, we pay guys to do that for us. I don't think that Nate Davis looked like a guy who was having a good day just from the press box. Did not look like a guy that was ready to go as much as you would want him to. Was not locked in a couple times, looked around, you know, what happened. And on that play that is mentioned in the question, he looked bad. He looked a little bit overmatched. He looked kind of out of shape. I don't know. Maybe he's just rusty. But I don't think that he looked ready for prime time. Maybe he's a veteran. You give him the benefit of the doubt. But had Nate Davis not had the accomplishments that he brought to Chicago last year, you would wonder what he's doing here. based on his what he's shown to this point. Saturday was another one of those days. Good for Caleb Williams in taking the responsibility for the sack. That's what good teammates do. That's what smart quarterbacks do. They protect their offensive linemen if they can. But it's Nate Davis's job to protect Caleb Williams, not the other way around. I hope he starts doing it.
You know who I believe should play on Thursday? Nate Davis. That's who should play on Thursday. And you know what? He should at least play the first half. And you could argue, I'll argue, he should play the whole game. Sort of as a punishment slash get in shape, get your backside in gear, young man.
Yeah, I don't know about punishment, but I think that the other part of it is very accurate, Dustin. He looked like a guy that was playing for the first time in a long time. He looked like a guy that didn't have any kind of buildup to get to a point where he was capable of being a good enough contributor to be a starter in the NFL. That play, if you go back and watch, he's like his back kind of got turned. He got overwhelmed on that play. He looked god awful. Okay, Caleb Williams took it. Brave of you, son. Way to go. Good job. That's being a good teammate. But good God, you know, if you put that tape out, hey, we got a guy. Are you interested in giving us anything for him? I mean, no, of course not. It was awful. So that's a really bad play. Again, you know, he's an NFL caliber starter based on the fact they gave him $30 million over 3 years. And you want to see him get up and running. But it matters. Preparation matters. Getting in shape matters. It's bigger than talking a game. It's also playing a good game. And how do you do that? You get up and running, and it looks like he has not been up or running. And they're running out of time with him and with their offensive line because we have another injury that no one knows about going on with Ryan Bates. So you need starters. You need to get ready. I think it's almost kind of a, you know, a Kieran Omagaji has now been activated, the rookie third-round pick. Guys got to play, man. You got to get thudded up and get ready for a season. I would definitely be playing him on Thursday night, Dustin.
I mean, I think you asked like four questions there.
Did you agree with Craig Counsell's simple assessment of the Cubs 1-0 loss to the Toronto Blue Jays on Sunday, wasting a strong outing by Shota Imanaga?
To put together the streaks, you got to deliver in all phases, and we just weren't able to deliver offensively today. You know, 3-1 run games, came out on top on two of them, but obviously you look at today as a missed opportunity.
Do you feel that way about this entire season?
Yeah, I think it's a missed opportunity. I think that their offensive woes have damaged them as much as anything going on with the bullpen, the closer, whatever you want to single out. Obviously, those two areas have kind of submarined them this year. And I think that when the season eventually ends, they're now 3 games below 500. We talk about what the schedule looks like the rest of the way and whether or not they're going to be able to make any kind of extended run or stretch. Well, if you're not scoring runs, if you can't get run support for a really good performance by Shota Imanaga, then guess what? You're not going to win a lot of games. Even as good as he was, you give up, you know, one dinger and that's too much. So, yeah, I think that it's been a real kind of underline to what's gone wrong this year. In order to put together the streaks, you got to do all phases of the game. You got to be able to hit. You got to play defense. You got to pitch well, both in your starters and your bullpen. And they've not done that, and so they haven't had the big runs, and so they're 3 games below 500.
Yeah, the whole season is kind of summed up into yesterday's game. Just the big, big old tease. 4 whole hits yesterday. Just that was one of the most boring baseball games I can remember sitting through. There was nothing going on. It was a bad, boring umpire behind home plate. Wasn't great, but that's not why they lost.
Okay, Dansby.
Baseball game. The funny thing is, the first time, and again, you know, I'm watching the game from home. I'm listening to the game from home or wherever I might have to go. And the first, I've given Craig Counsell a ton of grief about not, you know, leaning on that pole and not, you know, protecting his hitters. The one time he actually yesterday that I could see from home trying to protect his hitters, he was wrong. He was wrong. But, he was wrong.
But he started,
and he finally is protecting his hitters. But he was wrong.
But the, so that doesn't mean you when you protect your hitters, you're not always going to be right. You're protecting your hitters.
When the ump is wrong, he doesn't protect his hitters. This time, the ump was right, and he was wrong, but and now he's finally protecting his hitters.
From the first batter yesterday with Ian Happ going down looking, that was a game where you knew Craig Counsell was going to be on the home plate ump.
There was one where Nico Horner got called out on strikes, and he turns to the umpire and has words with him, and I'm like, but that was a strike. Like, that one was actually a strike. I understand. When there's inconsistency, you go nuts about any call, but it's kind of pick your spots a little.
The inconsistency. D'Angelo Swanson having the bat on the shoulder twice yesterday going down isn't a good look.
Not good.
Regardless of the umpiring, but I get it. The word microcosm has been used so often this year with Cubs losses, but every game seems like it's a microcosm of the season. So close and yet so far. So disappointing because you can't hit. I had the numbers since the All-Star break. It's ridiculous how much they have been shut out. Inexcusable for an offense that potentially is this talented. And the Cubs win 2 out of 3, but it felt like they lost the series because they had an opportunity. You give up one run at home, you should win on a Sunday.
Right.
You should then go into your off day with a little bit of momentum and belief. Now it's like skepticism and doubt. This is what the Cubs are this year. Disappointing in every way. Friday, boy, that looked good until Neris almost blew it. Saturday, they survived the rain delay. Sunday, you think they get out with a sweep? No, they can't finish the job because this team can't finish the job. So they are what they are, and that is a picture of disappointment, still with a chance to get hot. But does anybody really believe they can?
Terrific question. Need to get that answer. Don't have it for you today.
That's Bruce Levine. We'll hear more with Bruce at 8:25. Did you chuckle at Bob Nightingale's note on Sunday that the White Sox are saying privately that Grady Sizemore could be in the running as the manager next year, depending on the results at the end of the season? Do you believe this is a money thing?
I assume the last part is a rhetorical question, because with the White Sox, it's always a money thing, okay? And I assume also from the question that the people who are saying privately that Sizemore could be in the running is either Chris Getz or Jerry Reinsdorf, or both. Shh, shh, maybe he's in the running. Doesn't he look pretty good? Isn't he a handsome man? Doesn't he really look good when he walks out and argues with the umpires? Grady Sizemore, a year ago, was getting $15 an hour as an intern in the front office for the Diamondbacks. He is a great former player to have on your staff. To think that he was going to be the answer as a managerial candidate going into next season only tells me that you'd care little about next season. Maybe he can grow on the job. I like what I hear from him after the game. I like what you hear about him being the guy that a lot of players would go to when Grifol was here because he was an ex-player and they respected that about him. Maybe wearing the uniform before, being an ex-player, brings him the gravitas that some guys don't. Because Pedro never played as a major leaguer? I don't know. But given the options available, if you had to pick between the reigning National League Manager of the Year and a guy doing it for the first time, learning on the job, come on now.
But this would seem like a decision that Chris Getz would make. Like this because he would be in charge. I feel like Chris Getz wants to be in charge. He's told us that he's in charge. We speculate that he's not really in charge, that Tony's still got some fingers and he's an asset and I talk to him, but I make the final. The problem with the... Go ahead.
This is a Major League Baseball team, not a baseball academy.
Tell the owner that.
Next year it's going to look like a baseball academy with all these rookies and a manager in training.
So does the Marlins, current Marlins skipper, know how to work with rookies better than Grady Sizemore does?
He's done it.
Great, but I mean, Grady Sizemore also like has done it on the field as an all-star, and maybe you want him to learn, you want your player. Again, Grady Sizemore is not going to be making decisions in the eighth or ninth inning when the White Sox are trying to win the Central, but he might be that bridge guy.
I did chuckle. at this. And the reason I chuckled is because the only team that would ever have hired Pedro Grifol, definitely the only team that would have ignored all the results and stayed with Pedro Grifol, is now the only team that's going to stick with Grady Sizemore. How do you not laugh at that idea? I hope to God they go out and hire someone who's done something before in their life as opposed to a novice. Listen, Grady Sizemore has won what? He's won two of seven games, which is actually, I think, better than Pedro was doing. But the fact of the matter is he's already made some blunders and some mistakes and done the wrong thing. He's learning as he's doing a job that he is not yet capable of doing. And the idea that, well, you know what? Hey, we're seeing something from this guy. That's because you were looking too long at Pedro. Help.
Help.
All right.
All right.
We got a great one. We got a great question left here for the extra point, and we'll get to that next. Mully and Haw on the score.
He was wrong. But, he was wrong.
But he started.
And he finally is protecting. He said, first, but he was wrong.
Set up this extra point.
It's time for the extra point with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
What did you make of Albert Breer's tweet that the Patriots believe the Bears and the Falcons, quote, were in the same category, end quote, in terms of the value of next season's third-round pick, and gave Matthew Judon his choice of where he wanted to go? Quote, Judon obviously chose Atlanta, end quote. Do you believe he made the right choice? Did the Bears pull out because he wanted a contract extension? Do the Bears still need a pass rusher?
I think that you look at the Bears' depth chart, and yeah, they still need a pass rusher. They still need somebody opposite Montez Sweat. Now, some of the young guys have flashed, and I think that was one of the things on Saturday you were encouraged by as well. Daniel Hardy is having a very good training camp. If not for Austin Booker, so much attention focused on this year's rookie fifth rounder out of Kansas, you might be seeing more attention paid Daniel Hardy. Dominic Robinson is on his last gasp, but I think he has changed his body, and he has had, from what reports say, a decent camp. There are guys who you could look at as alternatives. Also, don't discount the role that the secondary will play in the pass rush. Matt Eberflus likes to blitz the nickel guy. He likes to come off the corner. That is one way to supplement your pass rush opposite Montez Sweat. There are all kinds of options that are less expensive than, say, Matthew Judon. I think Matthew Judon wanted a contract extension. The Bears made clear they were unwilling to give him because of his age, because of where they are in this window, and because of all of the other money that they have really outlaid this year. You look at the amount of cash the Bears have spent in 2024, and you can't say the McCaskies are cheap any longer. They may not spend the money always wisely, but this is clear they're not afraid to spend it. I think Judon was one of those situations where they didn't want to commit that long term. I think maybe the Haason Reddick argument could be similar. Not a guy that you want to have eating up that much cap space on a team that can get by mixing and matching maybe some young pass rushers. So not ideal. You still have DeMarcus Walker that you can move inside in a lot of different roles, but the young pass rushers are going to get an opportunity because the Bears were unwilling to commit long term financially to Matthew Judon, and I think that's the reason he went to Atlanta.
Sounds about right. It's fine. Maybe he wanted to be indoors. Maybe he liked the turf. Maybe he thought his game was better. Maybe he thought he could do more damage in that division than he could in the North. Who knows? Do they still need a pass rusher? Yeah, but Brandon, you know, made a good point during the break. I mean, there's been some of these young guys that have flashed a little bit. And if you could get them in a kind of a rotation to just have like fresh legs and go get the quarterback. Now, it's different if you're talking about a team, but I just don't think NFL teams don't like boring anymore. I feel like you could just run potentially at the opposite side of the Bears on defense. But listen, I don't know about going out and getting Ngakoue for $9 million and getting 3.5 sacks out of it. I don't know that that's the best idea right now.
You know, I think that there's two things at play here. The first is the question of the Matthew Judon thing and whether they wanted to give him any money. If he had agreed to play for the contract he's on, might they have been more likely to stay in it. I don't know. By all accounts, I think Biggsy reported they kind of pulled out of it at the idea that he needed an extension. But I think that's one element. First of all, do they need another pass rusher? Let me ask you a question. Has there ever been a defense in the history of the NFL, regardless of how great it was, whether it was the 85 Bears or whether you loved that Baltimore team, whatever it was, yes, you need another pass rusher. Always need another pass rusher. Who's the best pass rusher in the league? Do you like Cleveland? Are the Eagles still good? San Francisco? Yes, they all need another pass rusher. You always need another pass rusher. I don't care how complete your roster is. Just get that one more. Just get one more of them. Oh, you got to get another guy. I think what you're saying, Dustin, and what's interesting about Brandon and what you had to say is this idea. Jim Miller mentioned it on the broadcast that specialization is becoming more pronounced in the NFL at the pass rusher position, where teams are content to have guys. We're seeing that in the college game, and we're seeing that with the same player, both from his college career and now with the Bears, where if you are a specialist that can get to the pass rusher, Austin Booker, and you can make an impact, they're going to find a place for you on the roster, and they're going to find a place to get you in the game. No longer are guys pitching nine innings. It's more specialization. Same thing going on with a lot of pass rushers in the NFL. You're blessed to have a guy in Montez Sweat who can play every down and be on the field all the time. But, yes, you always need another pass rusher. And, yes, no matter who it is, the Bears, if they can get three sacks out of someone that's worth $9 million, go ahead and get it.
Hmm. They definitely have ways to get by if they –
they can get by, no question about it. They've got enough bodies. They can throw a lot at it. I'm just saying, you always need more. You always need more. That has to be the mentality.
I think that is always the mentality.
Always.
But I also think that responsibly, don't you want to – wouldn't you recommend that they just be cautious in adding just to add in terms of a veteran? I think you're saying the same – we're all saying kind of the same thing.
I think we are.
The cost of a guy like Judon for what you would get out of him at this stage of your growth probably wouldn't be worth it. You want to keep that money. You want to keep that cap space available for other needs and other situations.
But if you had him for just this year?
Yeah, but he wasn't coming here for that.
I get it. But I'm saying if a pass rusher makes one play, it could be a deciding of a game.
Yeah.
And if you get two or three of those, that's the difference between keeping a job or getting fired.
You know what I think they believe in? This is all related to the same idea. I think they believe in Matt Eberflus calling defenses in a way that maintain aggressiveness, that come from the secondary, that rely on more than just the four guys getting to the quarterback. He liked, and he kind of had this little, if Flusie can have a wry grin, but when he talked about Kyler Gordon and Blackwell coming off the edge on Saturday when he was asked about blitzing from the corner. He clearly likes that design of his defense and the way that he feels like he can disguise coverages in a way that makes the element of surprise one of their pass rushing weapons.
Totally agree. You should always have that in your bag of tricks. But if you ever get into a position where you can't pressure with the front four and you're relying upon the blitz, recipe for disaster.
Definitely. You don't want to get to that situation. The beauty of using the secondary as a pass rush component is the element of surprise and is a complementary aspect of it.
Totally agree.
You can't make a living that way,
nope.
But you can make an impact.
But there's a lot to like about what they're doing.
Yep.
But always be greedy.
Always be greedy.
That's just the lesson of the NFL. Mm-hmm. All righty, 312-644-6767. Where are you, Bear fans? Are you enjoying what you've seen thus far from the young quarterback, from the stout defense, from the combination of offense and defense thus far? And have you seen enough, or do you need a little more of that against the world champions? No, you don't. Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
So to start the game, you know, with the offense, you know, I thought, you know, what I thought Caleb did today that was really well was he had a nice professional day at quarterbacking.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. That's Matt Eberflus, the Bears head coach, talking about the performance of the first round draft pick, first overall draft pick. We had a texter who wanted to know if we thought the draft class was going to make the team. They had a very small draft class.
Four guys.
And but they end up with five, right?
Five, maybe.
They jump
yeah,
back
they,
in.
Five. They jump
so
back
they got
in.
Two number one picks.
Okay.
Caleb Williams and Rome Odunze. Yes, they're going to make the team.
They're
going to
make an impact.
They had a third round pick that they just activated, who will now have a ramp up period.
Amagaji, he'll make the team. He passed a physical. He's
totally,
there.
He's making the team.
Yes.
Austin Booker, they yeah, traded back
he's
in
he's making the team.
And before Austin Booker, Torrey Taylor is their punter.
Three punts on Saturday, I think average around 50. Well, really could boom it.
He can hit the ball. He's the best punter.
They're not only making the team, they're going to make a significant contribution.
Those five guys are making the team,
yeah.
And they're going to be good contributors.
All but Amagaji will play a role in week one.
I
as early
so.
As week one.
Yes.
You think Austin Booker will be up and active. You would be surprised if he's not. You need to get to the quarterback. You need him to get to the quarterback.
He's
had a pretty good camp.
He's doing well.
He's athletic. He's working on his moves. He's a good complement to DeMarcus Walker. They've moved those guys around. You like to see him moving around. I don't know what Dominique Robinson has to offer. Let's wait and see if he's up and active, what they do with him as a roster consideration. There's a lot to like, though.
Who's their punt returner?
Well, the other day, I was surprised that I think Blackwell was deep a couple times. Dante mm-hmm. Pettis has a chance to make this team. He had a good day as a receiver.
He had a good day.
He has nice chemistry with Tyson Bagent. I think he helped himself in that role because he can catch punts and return them in a way that gives him confidence or gives them confidence in him. He may be the front runner. I was surprised not to see Odunze get a shot. He has worked there in practice. It's a good question, though. Really good question. Fun atmosphere Saturday. I think that when you look around, there was a sense of anticipation for Caleb Williams. And after the first three series, let's face it, Mully, the offense looked very similar to last year. And it was a very familiar sense of dread when the offense came out to the field. And when Matt Eberflus references, and that's a good choice of words, a professional outing. Caleb Williams did not let what happened previously in the first quarter affect what happened after that. So he put two series together. The last one was the most memorable one. And there was a sense that there was something more significant happening than just a preseason touchdown when he scored on that scramble after buying time and completing the 45-yarder to Rome Odunze.
As an old cornerback, as an old secondary member yourself, you understand how important the short memory is in the NFL, in that position, in the quarterback, in any walk of life.
It's confidence.
You can't carry mistakes with you.
Yeah.
You've got to move on. And that was the thing. And I don't think it wasn't like Caleb Williams went out and fumbled the ball or threw a pick. It wasn't that he made a massive error or anything, but he's not carrying bad plays into the next series. He's not carrying a negative series into another series. He is a supremely confident young man who has quarterbacking chops, and he's done it long enough at a high enough level that he feels good about himself.
That's professionalism.
That's what it is.
That's what he was referring to, because last week was a very good week to be Caleb Williams because there was a lot of momentum in town and in practice based on his first showing. Based on the first glimpse that we got of him, the second glimpse that we got of him started slowly, but didn't finish that way. And let's face it, when you look at the numbers, they're not impressive. You look at the passer rating, and it's not something that makes you say, wow. But anybody that watched that game knows that the numbers don't describe accurately what happened. 6 of 13, 75 yards. Yeah, but it was how he managed himself in that final drive, the glimpse of greatness that people will remember most.
Let's try Jeff. Jeff's listening on the Odyssey app. Hey, Jeff, good morning.
Hey, good morning, gentlemen. A little alternative view, not to be a buzzkill, but watching the All-22 after that game, and I watched it in the first game, too, that he played, we're seeing a pattern almost like last year where he's missing, well, like Fields was, he's missing open receivers. And, Mully, you had mentioned a few times, take the easy cheese. We're not seeing the easy cheese being taken. And Coach Wanstead had mentioned on these airways about last year him at USC trying to get the home run balls. Mm-hmm. On the play, just a specific play, the Odunze play, he reads Odunze as his number one read. He's in the pocket, in a clean pocket. He breaks, and he does not throw him the ball. And then he looks to his right, and there's a wide-open receiver 10 yards down the field. It's probably his third read. And he decides to spin out. Now, he makes a great play off the cuff there, running to the left and throwing a dime. But what we're seeing is a kind of a repeat, and I'm wondering if that's going to be addressed by the coaching staff a little. And that's why I almost think he should play against Kansas City, to just either a series or two series, to see if there's a pattern starting there. And that's just something I saw in the game. And Gordon on defense, yes, you're right. Keep him healthy because he is a stud when he's healthy.
All right.
Listen to what you guys got to say.
Thanks, Jeff.
Appreciate it.
I think that's a valid point, but you don't want to coach the aggressiveness. You don't want to coach that big play mentality out of Caleb Williams. There's a balance to strike, and they'll find it.
Yeah, they will find it. He'll get better. I mean, this, you know, we're getting a glimpse, and we're getting a kind of a snapshot of where he's at. That will change as the year goes on.
I don't want him settling, though. I think there's got to be a happy medium. I don't want him thinking small. You want him throwing those deep ones to Tyler Scott. You want him taking those chances with Rome Odunze. You want him to be himself.
We need to discuss that further, but we've got our guy Brad Biggs jumping on, and we will we'll have Biggs time next. Mully and Haw on the score.
But he was wrong.
Set up this extra point.
It's time for the extra point with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
What did you make of Albert Breer's tweet that the Patriots believe the Bears and the Falcons, quote, were in the same category, end quote, in terms of the value of next season's third-round pick, and gave Matthew Judon his choice of where he wanted to go? Quote, Judon obviously chose Atlanta, end quote. Do you believe he made the right choice? Did the Bears pull out because he wanted a contract extension? Do the Bears still need a pass rusher?
I think that you look at the Bears' depth chart, and yeah, they still need a pass rusher. They still need somebody opposite Montez Sweat. Now, some of the young guys have flashed, and I think that was one of the things on Saturday you were encouraged by as well. Daniel Hardy is having a very good training camp. If not for Austin Booker, so much attention focused on this year's rookie fifth rounder out of Kansas, you might be seeing more attention paid Daniel Hardy. Dominic Robinson is on his last gasp, but I think he has changed his body, and he has had, from what reports say, a decent camp. There are guys who you could look at as alternatives. Also, don't discount the role that the secondary will play in the pass rush. Matt Eberflus likes to blitz the nickel guy. He likes to come off the corner. That is one way to supplement your pass rush opposite Montez Sweat. There are all kinds of options that are less expensive than, say, Matthew Judon. I think Matthew Judon wanted a contract extension. The Bears made clear they were unwilling to give him because of his age, because of where they are in this window, and because of all of the other money that they have really outlaid this year. You look at the amount of cash the Bears have spent in 2024, and you can't say the McCaskies are cheap any longer. They may not spend the money always wisely, but this is clear they're not afraid to spend it. I think Judon was one of those situations where they didn't want to commit that long term. I think maybe the Haason Reddick argument could be similar. Not a guy that you want to have eating up that much cap space on a team that can get by mixing and matching maybe some young pass rushers. So not ideal. You still have DeMarcus Walker that you can move inside in a lot of different roles, but the young pass rushers are going to get an opportunity because the Bears were unwilling to commit long-term financially to Matthew Judon, and I think that's the reason he went to Atlanta.
Sounds about right. It's fine. Maybe he wanted to be indoors. Maybe he liked the turf. Maybe he thought his game was better. Maybe he thought he could do more damage in the in that division than he could in the North. Who knows? Do they still need a pass rusher? Yeah, but Brandon, you know, made a good point during the break. I mean, there's been some of these young guys that have flashed a little bit. And if you could get them in a kind of a rotation to just have like fresh legs and go get the quarterback. Now, it's different if you're talking about a team, but I just don't think NFL teams don't like boring anymore. I feel like you could just run potentially at the opposite side of the Bears on defense. But listen, I don't know about going out and getting Ngakoue for $9 million and getting 3.5 sacks out of it. I don't know that that's the best idea right now.
You know, I think that there's two things at play here. The first is the question of the Matthew Judon thing and whether they wanted to give him any money. If he had agreed to play for the contract he's on, might they have been more likely to stay in it? I don't know. By all accounts, I think Biggsy reported they kind of pulled out of it at the idea that he needed an extension. But I think that's one element. First of all, do they need another pass rusher? Let me ask you a question. Has there ever been a defense in the history of the NFL, regardless of how great it was, whether it was the 85 Bears or whether you loved that Baltimore team, whatever it was, yes, you need another pass rusher. Always need another pass rusher. Who's the best pass rusher in the league? Do you like Cleveland? Are the Eagles still good? San Francisco? Yes, they all need another pass rusher. You always need another pass rusher. I don't care how complete your roster is. Just get that one more. Just get one more of them. Oh, you got to get another guy. I think what you're saying, Dustin, and what's interesting about Brandon and what you had to say is this idea. Jim Miller mentioned it on the broadcast that specialization is becoming more pronounced in the NFL at the pass rusher position, where teams are content to have guys. We're seeing that in the college game, and we're seeing that with the same player, both from his college career and now with the Bears, where if you are a specialist that can get to the pass rusher, Austin Booker, and you can make an impact, they're going to find a place for you on the roster, and they're going to find a place to get you in the game. No longer are guys pitching 9 innings. It's more specialization. Same thing going on with a lot of pass rushers in the NFL. You're blessed to have a guy in Montez Sweat who can play every down and be on the field all the time. But, yes, you always need another pass rusher. And, yes, no matter who it is, the Bears, if they can get 3 sacks out of someone that's worth $9 million, go ahead and get it.
They definitely have ways to get by if they –
they can get by, no question about it. They've got enough bodies. They can throw a lot at it. I'm just saying, you always need more. You always need more. That has to be the mentality.
I think that is always the mentality.
Always.
But I also think that responsibly, don't you want to – wouldn't you recommend that they just be cautious in adding just to add in terms of a veteran? I think you're saying the same – we're all saying kind of the same thing.
I think we are.
The cost of a guy like Judon for what you would get out of him at this stage of your growth probably wouldn't be worth it. You want to keep that money. You want to keep that cap space available for other needs and other situations.
But if you had him for just this year?
Yeah, but he wasn't coming here for that.
I get it. But I'm saying if a pass rusher makes one play, it could be a deciding of a game.
Yeah.
And if you get 2 or 3 of those, that's the difference between keeping a job or getting fired.
You know what I think they believe in? This is all related to the same idea. I think they believe in Matt Eberflus calling defenses in a way that maintain aggressiveness, that come from the secondary, that rely on more than just the 4 guys getting to the quarterback. He liked, and he kind of had this little, if Flusy can have a wry grin, but when he talked about Kyler Gordon and Blackwell coming off the edge on Saturday when he was asked about blitzing from the corner, he clearly likes that design of his defense and the way that he feels like he can disguise coverages in a way that makes the element of surprise one of their pass rushing weapons.
Totally agree. You should always have that in your bag of tricks. But if you ever get into a position where you can't pressure with the front four and you're relying upon the blitz, recipe for disaster.
Definitely. You don't want to get to that situation. The beauty of using the secondary as a pass rush component is the element of surprise and is a complementary aspect of it.
Totally agree.
You can't make a living that way,
nope.
But you can make an impact.
But there's a lot to like about what they're doing.
Yep.
But always be greedy.
Always be greedy.
That's just the lesson of the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
All righty, 312-644-6767. Where are you, Bear fans? Are you enjoying what you've seen thus far from the young quarterback, from the stout defense, from the combination of offense and defense thus far? And have you seen enough, or do you need a little more of that against the world champions? No, you don't. Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 a score.
So to start the game, you know, with the offense, you know, I thought, you know, what I thought Caleb did today that was really well was he had a nice professional day at quarterbacking.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 the score. That's Matt Eberflus, the Bears head coach, talking about the performance of the first-round draft pick, first overall draft pick. We had a texter who wanted to know if we thought the draft class was going to make the team. They had a very small draft class.
There's four guys.
But they end up with five, right?
Five, maybe.
They jump back
they,
in.
Five. They jump
so they
back
got
in.
Two number one picks.
Okay.
Caleb Williams and Rome Odunze. Yes, they're going to make the team.
They're
going to
make an impact.
They had a third round pick that they just activated, who will now have a ramp-up period.
Amagaji, he'll make the team. He passed a physical. He's
totally
there.
He's making the team.
Yes.
Austin Booker, they traded back in for.
He's making the team.
And before Austin Booker, Torrey Taylor is their punter.
Three punts on Saturday, I think average around 50. Well, really could boom it.
He can hit the ball. He's the best punter.
They're not only making the team, they're going to make a significant contribution.
Those five guys are making the team, and they're going to be good contributors.
All but Amagaji will play a role in week one, as early as week one.
Yes.
You think Austin Booker will be up and active? You would be surprised if he's not. You need to get to the quarterback. You need him to get to the quarterback.
He's
had a pretty good camp.
He's doing well.
He's athletic. He's working on his moves. He's a good complement to DeMarcus Walker. They've moved those guys around. You like to see him moving around. I don't know what Dominic Robinson has to offer. Let's wait and see if he's up and active, what they do with him as a roster consideration. There's a lot to like, though.
Who's their punt returner?
Well, the other day, I was surprised that I think Blackwell was deep a couple times. Dante Pettis has a chance to make this team. He had a good day as a receiver.
He had a good day.
He has nice chemistry with Tyson Bagent. I think he helped himself in that role because he can catch punts and return them in a way that gives him confidence or gives them confidence in him. He may be the front runner. I was surprised not to see Odunze get a shot. He has worked there in practice. It's a good question, though. Really good question. Fun atmosphere Saturday. I think that when you look around, there was a sense of anticipation for Caleb Williams. And after the first three series, let's face it, Mully, the offense looked very similar to last year. And it was a very familiar sense of dread when the offense came out to the field. And when Matt Eberflus references, and that's a good choice of words, a professional outing, Caleb Williams did not let what happened previously in the first quarter affect what happened after that. So he put two series together. The last one was the most memorable one. And there was a sense that there was something more significant happening than just a preseason touchdown when he scored on that scramble after buying time and completing the 45-yarder to Rome Odunze.
As an old cornerback, as an old secondary member yourself, you understand how important the short memory is in the NFL, in that position, in the quarterback, in any walk of life.
It's confidence.
You can't carry mistakes with you.
Yeah.
You've got to move on. And that was the thing. And I don't think it wasn't like Caleb Williams went out and fumbled the ball or threw a pick. It wasn't that he made a massive error or anything. but he's not carrying bad plays into the next series. He's not carrying a negative series into another series. He is a supremely confident young man who has quarterbacking chops, and he's done it long enough at a high enough level that he feels good about himself.
That's professionalism.
That's what it is.
That's what he was referring to, because last week was a very good week to beat Caleb Williams because there was a lot of momentum in town and in practice based on his first showing, based on the first glimpse that we got of him. The second glimpse that we got of him started slowly but didn't finish that way. And let's face it, when you look at the numbers, they're not impressive. You look at the passer rating, and it's not something that makes you say, wow. But anybody that watched that game knows that the numbers don't describe accurately what happened. 6 of 13, 75 yards. Yeah, but it was how he managed himself in that final drive, the glimpse of greatness that people will remember most.
Let's try Jeff. Jeff's listening on the Odyssey app. Hey, Jeff, good morning.
Hey, good morning, gentlemen. A little alternative view, not to be a buzzkill, but watching the All-22 after that game, and I watched it in the first game, too, that he played, we're seeing a pattern almost like last year where he's missing, like Fields was, he's missing open receivers. And, Mully, you had mentioned a few times, take the easy cheese. We're not seeing the easy cheese being taken. And Coach Wanstead had mentioned on these airways about last year him at USC trying to get the home run balls. Mm-hmm. On the play, just a specific play, the Odunze play, he reads Odunze as his number one read. He's in the pocket, in a clean pocket. He breaks, and he does not throw him the ball. And then he looks to his right, and there's a wide open receiver 10 yards down the field. It's probably his third read. And he decides to spin out. Now, he makes a great play off the cuff there, running to the left and throwing a dime. But what we're seeing is a kind of a repeat, and I'm wondering if that's going to be addressed by the coaching staff a little. And that's why I almost think he should play against Kansas City, to just either a series or two series, to see if there's a pattern starting there. And that's just something I saw in the game. And Gordon on defense, yes, you're right. Keep him healthy because he is a stud when he's healthy.
All right.
Listen to what you guys got to say.
Thanks, Jeff.
Appreciate it.
I think that's a valid point, but you don't want to coach the aggressiveness. You don't want to coach that big play mentality out of Caleb Williams. There's a balance to strike, and they'll find it.
Yeah, they will find it. He'll get better. I mean, this, you know, we're getting a glimpse, and we're getting a kind of a snapshot of where he's at. That will change as the year goes on.
I don't want him settling, though. I think there's got to be a happy medium. I don't want him thinking small. You want him throwing those deep ones to Tyler Scott. You want him taking those chances with Rome Odunze. You want him to be himself.
We need to discuss that further, but we've got our guy Brad Biggs jumping on, and we'll have Biggs time next. Mully and Haw on the Score.